This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
Stuart Buxbaum is a volunteer at the Johannesburg and Holocaust Center. He has recently written an article for the center for a future exhibition for displaced persons camps. The same article was published in full in Jewish Affairs. Displaced camps are not very well known part of the history post the Holocaust, and I'm absolutely delighted to have Stuart as my guest now to tell me more. Stuart, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
Stuart, let's start off with what happened after the Holocaust. Where did people go and what were the numbers?
Well, essentially what happened was that after the Second World War, there were 11 million displaced persons located mainly in the zones, occupied zones of Germany and Italy. There were approximately 300,000 Jews who would eventually pass through the displaced persons camps. There were, in fact, 1.2 million East Europeans who had been displaced who refused to go back to their homes because they had now been occupied by the communist regime. So they all, most of them, ended up in the DP camps, of which between 250,000 and 300,000 Jewish inmates passed.
Oh, it's it must have been very horrific and very terrifying post the war. Can you describe the flood from the east to the camps?
What happened is many of the Jews and obviously of the general population fled deep into Russia as the war started, in order to avoid persecution and damage and dislocation. After the war, they came back. The Polish Jews came back to their country, and what they found was anti-Semitism had not abated. If you do get a chance to read Yehuda Bauer's book called The Death of the Shtetl, he writes explicitly about the history of anti-Semitism in Poland. So it didn't, after the war, simply disappear. When the Jews came back, they were confronted with a great deal of anti-Semitism. So there were roughly 26 small-scale pogroms that occurred in Poland. But the main one was in 1946 in July, ironically on July the 4th, called the Kielce pogrom. And from that, Jews fled into the occupied zones and into the DP camps. So there were 72 DP camps, roughly. And amongst the most important names, or the ones that are frequently mentioned, are Deggendorf, Landsberg, Bergen-Belsen, Munich, and Fehrenwald. Now, it's important to remember that we think of Bergen-Belsen as a concentration camp, yet immediately afterwards it was converted into a DP camp.
Sure.
So the conditions were horrific. And so at that time, after the war, in about 1946, Jews constituted about 26% of the population in the DP camps.
Wow. What other communities were in the DP camps? What other community?
Well, it wasn't only the Jews that were in the DP camps. There was every type of displaced person. There were people from the Baltic states, Poles who had fled, prisoners of war. It was a large demography of people all across Europe that had been affected detrimentally by the war. So altogether, there were presumably 1.2 million people who would pass through these camps.
Hmm. Who set up the camps?
Okay, this is interesting. It was the United Nations organization. So when we think United Nations, we have to not think of the kind of ideas that we have today, So the organization was the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Agency, shortened UNRRA. And it took over the running of the camps from the military authorities. UNRWA had been established by the Allies. It was a cooperation between America, the UK, and the USSR. By far the largest donor to UNRWA was the United States. They provided $3.7 billion to UNRWA, which was 70% of all the contributions.
Wow, that is incredible. I mean, I can just imagine, like, after the Holocaust, where people are, like, free, as it were, they didn't have anywhere to go. And as you said, if they went back to Poland, there were just further pogroms. So how did people hear and know and learn about them and find themselves in there?
Well, they were spread all over the occupied zones, and the word got around. Mm-hmm. There were also organizations. There was the organization the Merkaz HaPlechim, which was an overall body that coordinated almost the life of the people in the camps. So it was a small area, basically, Germany, essentially, and DP camps were located throughout those zones. And people in need found the places that they could go to.
So what did UNRWA provide?
So UNRWA had a program which is quite interesting. It's usually called the four R's. These refer to really the universally applicable ideas of rescue, relief, rehabilitation, and reconstruction. So this was largely successful. But some analysts talk about it being divided between the giver and the receiver, and suggested that there was some sort of passive acceptance by the DPs of the help that they got. So self-development was somewhat relegated. And then when we come to the idea of the joint, we'll see how the joint changed its ideas.
So the joint obviously is the Jewish organization set up to help Jews specifically after the war. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So the Jewish joint, under the leadership essentially of a man called Joseph Schwartz. So if I may just put this into context, after the Second World War, again, an examination of the camps was made under the aegis of President Truman. And he sent Earl Harrison to the camps, and Earl Harrison took with him a man by the name of Joseph Schwartz. Joseph Schwartz was head of the Jewish Joint Distribution Committee, which is simply known as the Joint. They wrote a report which was horrifying. In fact, when Truman read the report, it's reported that he felt completely ill by reading it. And I just have to quote the end of the report. They, in other words, Earl Harrison and Joseph Schwartz, wrote, "We appear to be treating the Jews as the Nazis treated them, except that we do not exterminate them." So immediately, Truman sent Eisenhower to the camps and Patton. Patton, the famous general, after this event, was actually demoted for his venal description of the Jews. But what the joint did was they had a slightly different program, and they relied on self-help. It was an idea of tikkun. And although they followed more or less the same program as did the UNRWA, they changed it in a sense in terms of social and cultural and Jewish development within the camps. So what they did is they created and they participated in social and cultural and religious and educational activities especially in the larger camps. It is quite extraordinary because theatres and orchestras were established, and collectively, more than 70 Yiddish newspapers were published in the camps, which is quite extraordinary. If you imagine the poverty-stricken environment of the camps, and yet even more interesting is the author David Nassau, who's written about The Last Million. He writes that there were even boxing matches that took place in the DP camps, and obviously chess. But importantly, they were the Jewish inmates of the camps were the first people who really researched the Holocaust. They collected testimonies, they gathered documentation, and they held memorial services. They also studied Hebrew and learned about the line.
The relationship between these camps and settling in Israel? When you talk about Zionism?
Yeah, well, as is well known, Israel at the time was under the mandate of Britain, and Jews naturally, I have to just step back a bit. There were many other DP inhabitants, if you can call it that, that were not Jewish. And after the Second World War, there was a huge depletion of the workforces of the various countries.
Mm-hmm.
So those countries sent emissaries to the DP camps. They selected people who were able, even in terms of those shocking conditions, who were able to work, who were easily assimilable in the new country that they would be taken to. But the Jews were, for obvious reasons, and again the stereotypes and the ideas of who they were and what were thought to be, remained within the camps. So the only option afterwards was America, which did allow them in, but that's another story which we can cover if you wish, and obviously Israel. So Israel was a mandated country under Britain. And there was even from the Yishuv quite a lot of opposition to the idea of these emaciated people coming to Israel. Ben-Gurion, however, was not deterred. And 142 ships run by the Bricha in an underground method were taken to Israel. Palestine, but most of them were intercepted and people were again interned on various internment camps, especially Cyprus is the most famous one. I also just need to turn to an idea about Tikkun and how the Jewish joint and the people themselves refashioned their lives. So this may sound quite strange, but within this depleted community, people found each other and fell in love. And in Bergen-Belsen, there's data that reveals that in 1946, that's the first full year after the war, 1,070 marriages took place. And at times, there were 6 to 7 weddings taking place daily, and sometimes 50 in a week. That sounds edifying, but there are authors like Tom Segev who calls these marriages bittersweet post-Holocaust marriages, and also the marriages of despair. But yet, children were born in the camp. The researcher David Nassau says that at that specific time, the birth rate in Bergen-Belsen, again for a limited period, was the highest birth rate in the world.
Sure.
So children were born in the camps, and the infant mortality rate was quite low because the Jewish mothers took great care of their children. Tuberculosis had also by then been eradicated, and that came too late, unfortunately, to save the life of Anne Frank, who passed away just shortly before the camp was liberated and then became the DB camp.
How did they get from the camps to Israel?
Well, eventually, when Israel became a state, Jews were absorbed into Israel. And despite the initial reluctance of a great deal of the Yeshuv itself, they were absorbed and finally became citizens of the only country that really would have accept them. There were other countries that did make an effort to accept them. For example, the United States, they had a specific legislation called the Truman Doctrine, but it was very bureaucratically organized, and members of Congress had a lot of opposition to the idea. But towards the end of the war, and towards the end of the DP camp's existence, the DP camps finally, the last camp, closed in 1952. So that's 7 years after the long duration of the camp. So if we go back to the beginning and imagine that, I mentioned that there were 250,000 to 300,000 Jews in the DP camps, 80,000 Jewish DPs eventually settled in the US, about 136,000 settled in Israel, and another 20,000 in other countries. So that more or less corresponds with the figure that eventually came into the DP camps.
That's absolutely fascinating. I don't know how you even began to find this topic and research it.
There's a lot of information available, and some really remarkable studies that have been done.
And as you say at the beginning, you said at the beginning that people don't really know much about this because it's like the aftermath of the Holocaust, and the focus was on the Holocaust, obviously. So this is an important study. And also really does contribute to understanding the end process and the absorption. I mean, it's an incredible story.
Yeah, it is. And as I also mentioned in the beginning, that the Holocaust overshadows everything.
Mm.
The other interesting just idea is that there have been memorial services and people coming together from the DP camps, and obviously who had survived the Shoah and possibly its most extreme events. But when they met, they spoke only about the DP camps.
Mm.
And they spoke primarily about the good times that they had, the weddings that they attended, the Yiddish newspapers, the Landsmannschaften that were established. Landsmannschaften, I'm sure people are knowledgeable about it, but they are associations of people who came from specific towns and villages and shtetls. And South Africa itself, in its post-war period, they've largely disappeared now, had a number of Landsmannschaft organizations where people from the same village got together, lent each other support, participated in their lives, and generally eased their transition into a new society.
Oh, what an incredible story. Thank you so much for sharing it. So your article can be found in full in Jewish Affairs, and now it's just a question of the exhibition being opened.
Yes, with time.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining me. That was Stuart Buxbaum, and we were talking about displaced camps, displaced people's camps, and that is the subject of an article he has written for Jewish Affairs.